I'm Dean Newland, and welcome to the Business of Intuition, where I coach, facilitate, train, and speak on the hard science and meaningful experience of intuitive leadership in business, so you can make better decisions, forge real connections, and creatively solve problems to amplify your impact and simplify your life. Welcome to the Business of Intuition.
At some point in our career, we have all had this experience when there's been a member of our team who is absolutely brilliant, knocks it out of the park, but is a complete jerk. Whatever they do, how they communicate, somehow people feel discounted, picked on, and shredded by the behaviors of this brilliant person. So what do you do? How do you manage a person who on one hand is doing great things for the company, but on the other hand is destroying the culture? Oh, and on top of it, let's say that our company is also conflict averse and we don't want to engage in difficult discussions. Well, my next guest on the Business of Intuition is really a master at this topic when it comes to dealing with what she calls the brilliant jerk. Dr. Katrina Burris is CEO of Excellent Executive Coaching and is known for fast-tracking inspiring leaders to the C-suite and for transforming brilliant jerks into inspiring leaders. She is a keynote speaker and author of Managing Brilliant Jerks and Global Leadership, a body of work used by Nestle, Novartis, the World Health Organization, the International Labor Organization, the United Nations, to name a few. And she's recently been featured in Mexico, India, Kazakhstan, and Russia. Dr. Burris has 20 years experience as the first master certified coach and founding board member for the International Coaching Federation in Switzerland. Dr. Katrina Burris.
So Katrina, thank you so much for being a guest on the Business of Intuition. I think your topic is something that we all can relate to because we all have had in our job at one time or another, a person that we would deem the jerk, the person who seems to cause so much disruption in our work environment. So maybe if you could just start us off as, you know, I know you've got a wonderful book on this topic, which we'll talk about, but what is the jerk? Could you define this person? What are the characteristics that one would say, yep, you kind of fall into that category?
Yeah, so a jerk is someone that has in a situation of power like any leader, but besides that is causing a workplace distress by their interpersonal interactions. And so it's, we can all be stressed and, you know, be maybe nip at people by being overwhelmed and everything. The brilliant jerk is continuous and it's not always predictable because they can be charming and then they can revert to really sort of criticize you on a personal level and can be even by surprise. Like they can be subservient to their boss, but very toxic to their employees. And so it's a combined of being abrasive, hurtful, attacking on a personal level, and at the same time can be charming depending the situation. So a bit unpredictable. Now, I don't only say they're jerks, I say they're brilliant.
Brilliant jerks. Yeah, so state what that means when you say brilliant jerk.
Because usually they're very good experts at what they do, or they turn around a company, they've done very good work, and the company values them for something, so that they want to keep them on. But at one point, the disruption they caused on a team level or interpersonally, they begin to wonder whether they should keep the person or not, even though maybe they're the biggest earners in the company, or they just turn around people and they're pretty ruthless in the way they do it.
So is this brilliant jerk a narcissist?
I'm glad you asked. I would say maybe there's traits of narcissism, but some people say they're psychopaths, and I I think psychopath is a sickness, and you can even see it in the brain that there's blue zones that are dormant that should be lit up when you interact with people. So I think that's a real sickness, and I sort of resent people that say immediately they're psychopath, because for at least the people that I've worked with, the intent is not really to hurt. They have issues and they're triggered. They feel vulnerable and attacked, and they react in a sort of triggered fight mode. But I don't think it's just their intent to be mean. And that would say the person that gets pleasure and hurting other people is usually a psychopath, I would say.
So I want to get into that side of this regarding the makeup of what's going on with the jerk, the triggers, the motivations, the fears. Before I go into that, what are the costs to the team, to the organization, to continue to have the jerk, the brilliant jerk, go unchecked?
For one, the costs are excess turnover, absenteeism, presenteeism. So presenteeism means that they're present, but they're physically present, but not mentally present. And therefore, they're not productive because they're still processing the hurt they got from the interpersonal relationship with the boss. There's people that could have sleep at night, have ulcers, be really more processing how the person said it than really what they said. So, and that's what these brilliant jerk needs to understand. It's not always what they said that is wrong. Maybe they have a lot of insights that may be right, but how they express it and how they communicate it is more destructive than constructive.
Understood, right.
And maybe a good way to see the difference is to see how does a brilliant jerk react compared to a demanding leader, but is inspirational. So the brilliant jerk, there's an employee that comes with a problem, and the brilliant jerk is triggered because the failure they see as reflecting on themselves or being an impediment to what they want. And they triggered. So we'll get back to that. The demanding boss, but that is inspirational, really sort of has the same issue. The employee has not succeeded his project and communicates it. But the demanding boss will step back and look at the situation. First, is this person unable to do it? Well, if they're unable, the project needs to be shortened, or that person needs a mentor, or that person needs more training. So has a perspective, this person has not succeeded. What is the issue and how we could, what does he need to succeed, or what does she need to succeed? Or they also step back and look at the situation. Is it the person that doesn't have the capacity to do it, or is not motivated to do it? And has, so the demanding boss, but inspirational, he checks in and says, has the leadership agility to change his leadership style according to the issue at hand. So if someone is less motivated, they'll have a heart-to-heart discussion. And so there's two things. They see the person outside of themselves, and they also are capable of reacting to the situation in different ways according to the different issues at hand. The brilliant jerk tends to react to any issue or problem more or less in the same way by being aggressive, and the fight, flight, flee mode would be more in the fight mode.
So with the added stress that most of us have experienced over the last couple of years, are we seeing more brilliant jerks emerge?
Well, the added stress, it's also how the leader manages that stress. I would say today, the being more virtual it's even more important that these brilliant jerks get the kind of coaching they need to change their ways, because the interaction is very little and has more impact because there's less face-to-face. Or like a brilliant jerk, usually after they have been aggressive, have remorse, and they'll come back and try to pace the situation together. Well, that is less, more difficult by email or internet. So I think interpersonal savviness is even more important in a virtual environment, because these people are alone. They're sort of isolated. They don't have colleagues to talk to. So if someone is, a boss is aggressive to them, they can't go to their colleagues and complain and process it. They might be demotivated for a long time, and that is an added cost. The other cost that one often doesn't think about is that when there's a brilliant jerk that is coming in the office and is in a bad mood, people will say, he's in a bad mood. So if you didn't get the job done, don't go see him today. Or don't go see her today, because she'll fire up. So what are the costs to that? Is that something becomes almost a crisis before it resurfaces. And the leader cannot deal with the issue at hand early on when it's not a big issue. It usually becomes an issue before it's addressed. So that's another cost. And people react according to the mood of the person. That's not according to what is best for the company, especially, out of self-preservation.
So I've heard, a lot of people come to mind as you are talking, and I'm sure people are listening in on this and have names and faces that are coming into their mind as well. What's your thought on these brilliant jerks knowing that they are jerks? Do they have that self-awareness that, have they been given the feedback and been told, we love the fact that you create these great results, but your behavior is causing other unintended consequences? That appears to be not enough to be able to turn the tide. With others, maybe it will. For sometimes a brilliant jerk, at least from my experience, that doesn't always get the job done. So how do you then get the brilliant jerk to make the changes that are needed?
So one of my clients received the 360 degree feedback, which is feedback from the boss, the peers, and the employees, 5 years consequently. And always he had brilliant results, but the employees had difficulty communicating with him, and he was considered a bad communicator. 5 years. So he was aware, but that doesn't mean he can change. It takes. What got him there and his success was that this kind of behavior, this drive to succeed. And then all of a sudden, at one point, it doesn't work. And in this case, this fellow was an immigrant, and all his family had put pressure on him to succeed and to rise in the hierarchy of the organization. So he was under tremendous pressure to prove that he was good enough. So that is the pressure he's under. Once they're aware, in this case, they know that they're not doing well, and it starts to be a problem for their career. I also like, when I start, is to start with the boss that gives that exact example, Dean, that you said, look, we're happy with your results, but it cannot continue like this. You have to change your behavior to your direct reports or to your employees. That's first start. And then I would come in and say, so why do you think I'm here? And then I realize, one, how aware they are. Two, did the boss actually tell them what they were supposed to? Because what happens if the boss is an avoidant leader? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, that's kind of where I'm getting to, is that in some ways, brilliant jerks may have been given the feedback, and even 360s, as you described, might point to a real gap in what is needed, and yet it still continues. And so I wonder, are we partially at fault for creating the brilliant jerk by enabling the behavior?
I don't know if enabling, but allowing it. So, you know, for example, a hospital that searches high and wide for brilliant cardiologists finally is able to engage this brilliant cardiologist in the hospital. And then they find out that he has terrible bedside manners.
Right.
And so it costs them so much to have this cardiologist come, and he has such a great reputation. But yet internally, no nurse wants to work with him, or because of his toxic way, they start making mistakes. So that costs the company. So they'll allow it for a long time because they're so happy to have him, and he brings the aura. But there has to be, like you say, somebody that says, we can't take this anymore. And if you don't change here, we're going to let you go. But we'll help you by giving you an executive coach to do this change. Because for years, what got them there has worked. And all of a sudden, you're going to tell them that it's not going to work, that they have to change. So they don't know how.
I wonder about that, though, because I think that I'm looking into my own database of experiences, right? And I think that yes, I agree with you 100% that what got you there is also becoming the problem moving forward. I also think that there are a certain skill set that a person may have, like the cardiology example that you just gave. World class, published, you know, top of his or her game. We want that skill, but their personality and their interpersonal skills is really lacking. And it always has been lacking, but it's always been overshadowed by the brilliance of their skills. And so that's happened maybe in med school, it goes all the way up to residents, and now all of a sudden, you know, you're a chair of a department. So I do think that sometimes you bring along this poor EQ, emotional intelligence, but it gets so overshadowed by the result that you create that we kind of go, well, we need the cardiologist, we need that expert, but we're willing to put up with this other behavior and we hope that it gets better, but maybe it doesn't. Is that your experience too? Sometimes.
Yes. And in my book, I give examples, you know, that, he's going through a divorce, this will change, or he's trying to get the department into shape, so it's a temporary situation. They give a lot of excuses
right. For
a long time. But then that's where management needs to give the message to their employees or to their leaders. And then once that's done, and then it's to help the person be more aware. So usually when I come in, they are not too happy because they have a fault, or someone's told them they have a fault, and they think maybe I'll make them soft, or that I'll make them less effective, because having this attitude, of course, gets them results. Mm-hmm. So I don't insist on coaching them. I say usually my objective is to get them curious enough to want to find out how they're perceived, both in their brilliance and in what might be impeding them in their careers.
So what then is the root of this? What are the fears of that brilliant jerk that get triggered? And when they do, the behavior we don't want starts to manifest. What's the core of the brilliant jerk's fears? Can you list what they may be?
Okay, this is probably a little controversial, but I think I give you the example of the immigrant, where there's so much focus on what results they can bring, mm-hmm. that there's hardly any focus on their acceptance as a being. Mm. Like, you have children, do you have children?
I have one, yes.
Do you have children?
One.
Yeah. So you probably love your
kid. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's one enough.
Yeah.
You probably love your kid for who he is.
Yep.
And for what he does. Huh?
Correct.
Yeah. So what happens if the balance is so strongly on what he does? Okay. Mm-hmm. The results he gets. That creates an insecurity that he's only as good as what he does.
So is that one of the the hallmarks of a brilliant jerk is that they only perceive their value based on what they do versus who they are?
Let's say that's a reductive definition, but yes.
Okay. And so let me play this forward, because let's say the brilliant jerk may have this trigger that I'm only as valuable as the results I get. And let's say that this brilliant jerk has been given feedback that we value you as a person. Maybe we've given you a coach. Maybe we've socialized with you. Maybe we ask you about your family. We support that side of you that is the human versus just the doer who is so good at what they do. And yet the behavior continues. Is there any sort of advice you might give to those situations? We've reinforced the side of the human being, but the brilliant jerk side, the jerk side still keeps running amok.
Well, it's hard for you to come years later and compensate that need that they have, okay? But let's say, I think there's all sorts of behaviors that come from that situation. So like, as soon as they go into a hotel and they think the hotel doesn't reflect their status, they get all upset. Okay, so that's, hey, they're not valuing me for my results, for what I can do, because they didn't give me a nice hotel room, or they didn't give me the office with the three windows. Okay, so the brilliant jerk has that to an extreme, I would say. To compensate for that, yes, you could. That might help, but it's not enough, because all the behaviors that they have been molded with are reflective of that lack or need. So they need to recreate behaviors that work, that are more conducive. Like if someone comes into a meeting and says, he comes in or she comes in screaming that no one has any ideas here, that she's disappointed, that they haven't offered any results or solutions for the problems at hand. Now, if you're being screamed at and being belittled, are you going to give your next idea?
Right.
No.
Right.
So there needs to be a process with someone, a coach outside, that also says, okay, why do you think that happened? Why do you think they don't have ideas? Why do you think they could be silenced when you come in the room? And so let them think it out, because they're brilliant. They're brilliant. So they'll figure it out eventually that maybe something in their behavior is causing that reaction. And so that's one thing. The other thing is, I do, again, research work within the organization. And I'll give you another example of a client of mine that was a woman, that you need to give them feedback that's so precise. So she was definitely brilliant, had a lot of corporate knowledge. But every year they said she doesn't communicate well. She's a bad communicator. And she did extremely well in the Eastern Europe company and turned the company from red to black figures, making profit, and then was asked to go to Asia and develop the Asian market. Well, it's a different culture as well.
Right.
But I did the research work, and when they said, she doesn't communicate well, we can't work with her. What does that mean? Well, every time we ask her a question, she rolls her eyes and sighs. She never walks next to us. She walks three steps ahead. So that kind of precise information you give back to your client, then they can understand what they're doing that is perceived as hostile, that is perceived as, you know,
confrontational. Yeah. Okay.
And so then they can start realizing exactly what they do and try to compensate it. But that's still, the trigger is still there. So in this case, this person was chit-chatting with a friend of hers for lunch, and then somebody comes rushing in and says, the big boss is here. You got to go to the meeting. So they're chit-chatting and friendly, and then they get into a meeting, and my client sees it's the big boss. Whoa. Then she tries to impress this big boss. And how does she do it? She criticizes her friend. Every idea she has is criticized and belittled. And as she is very brilliant, she really does criticize her. And then she comes out of the meeting and calls me up and says, look, I just couldn't help myself.
Yeah. So you bring up a good question, though. Couldn't help myself. I'm thinking about our programs that we've done. We do a lot of coaching as well. I know you do. We've even done programs on how to be a coach. And part of that is to define what coaching is and what it isn't. And what's the blurring of the line between coaching and therapy? And we talk about, well, coaching is very simplistic, thinking about from here to the future. And therapy is really from here to the past. We're like uncovering and resolving issues from the past. And that sometimes coaches may run into a situation where they go like, wow, this is a situation for a therapist, because we're trying to undo and reframe old patterns and hurts and situations. I'm not skilled at that. That's not my understanding of human dynamics. I'm all about moving forward. So I guess I'm wondering, from what you're talking about with this brilliant jerk scenario, is this the job of a therapist, or can a coach manage a person who is a brilliant jerk?
Okay, so let's go back to my example. She was told, I couldn't help myself. Okay, so what does a coach do? Says, okay, why couldn't you help yourself? I mean, there could be a lot of different ways to approach the situation, but to make that person underline, what was her need that she criticized her friend and set her in pieces, you know, cut her up in pieces verbally? And what was she needing? How does she perceive the boss, how he sees the situation? So it's developing emotional intelligence. How does a friend see it? That she can see. How does the boss see that she's criticizing? Is that the impression she wants? Does he really value that? And how's there's different ways to show her competence without hurting somebody else? I think.
I get it. So you're really unpacking, you're getting to the source of why that person did what they did and what need wasn't met, and how could you then possibly get in the future without tearing somebody apart? Could be the job of a coach, may not necessarily need to be given to a therapist.
In this case, I think not.
Okay. Yeah. But it sounds, I mean, again, you tell me, you're the guy that wrote the book on this. There are times when the severity of the brilliant jerk really is not something that management can manage, is not really something that even a good coach could manage. This is really something that we need a quote unquote therapist with all their skills and backgrounds to be able to get them to par, get them to here so that we can move forward.
Okay, also I'll answer a short question. One,
sure.
they have to want to be coached on it.
Agreed, yes.
It doesn't have to be in the beginning, but at one point when they get the feedback, they'll have to want to be coached. Two, the intent can't be to desire or love to hurt the other person.
Sure. Right.
If intent is to hurt the other person and they get any kind of pleasure out of it, then it's a psychotherapy.
That's a different issue. Yeah.
Yeah.
Versus I just couldn't help myself. I know it was wrong. I regret it, but I got a trigger. I got a habit that is around protecting myself, but in so doing, I hurt other people.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. And it sounds like it's iterative, it's slow, but it eventually over time, with a lot of specific type of examples and helping them reframe the situation, you might be able to help a person sort of dissolve some of those behaviors that tear or cut people up, if you will.
Yes, I think they're brilliant. That's why I keep that word in, because
yeah.
You give them the means to help themselves, they will over time. It doesn't happen right away because they can get better and then revert back. So you want to do it over time so they really integrate the new habits. The other thing is, as the people around them need to be aware, because you're working with a system.
Yes.
That person after working will go back into the organization. Like the cardiologist who was very toxic, although he's working on himself, so he's trying these new behaviors. And now he's going to go back and he realizes he should be more interpersonally savvy. So he goes to the nurse and says, so how was your weekend? Do you have children? What do you want to do in your career? So if you're used to a behavior that's pretty toxic and all of a sudden this person comes in and shoots questions to you in a bit of an awkward way because it's really not natural yet, they haven't really integrated the behavior, that person will say, oh my God, what does this person want from me now? They want me to do work all weekend, you know?
Yeah.
So if that happens, the person will come back to me and say, see, it doesn't work. But if the person knows that that person is working on themselves, on their leadership, they'll say, oh, he's trying so hard.
Yeah, they're making an effort. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So otherwise, you're bringing a recovering alcoholic back to the bar with their drinking buddies.
Good analogy there. So I guess I'll ask you a final question here as we sort of wrap this up. And I want you to also let us know how we can stay in touch with you. I am, let's say, I'm a vice president of some company, and I hear this particular podcast, and I realize, oh my gosh, I've got a brilliant jerk on my team. This makes a lot of sense. It just finally comes to light. That's what we have here. I understand the cost, but I also understand just how brilliant this person is, but it's getting to be a real problem. Simplistically, what should I do? What's my first two or three steps to move forward on addressing this brilliant jerk issue?
First step is to communicate, you know, the situation.
To the brilliant jerk.
To the brilliant jerk and be very clear. It's a difficult situation. And the second is to provide help to change.
Which could be a 360, could be a coach, could be any number of things.
Well, I don't think 360 really works, as I mentioned with one of my clients. It's not the awareness. The awareness is only one first step. Then it's really changing those negative behaviors into something more constructive for themselves and for others.
But wouldn't the 360 potentially give you awareness around blind spots that you just didn't have before? That's not the end of the story. There's other things that will come from that. Maybe it's coaching. Maybe there's some other intervention that could take place. But we have at least a common ground of what you're doing well and where you're causing damage from a variety of perspectives.
Right, in the very beginning. But again, the 360 doesn't always give you that detailed description of what behavior, even nonverbal, like in the case I told you, looking up and sighing and, you see, even that kind of degree of detail will at least help that person understand exactly what they're doing that is very offensive. The 360 is a very good instrument. I'm not criticizing that. I just think it needs to be more detailed for a brilliant jerk.
I would agree with that. In fact, we do 360s that are customized given the context of the company and the person in it. So those questions are targeted to them. And if it's a brilliant jerk, then we would focus in on behaviors that are getting in the way and then getting feedback around that. But this has been really, I think this is a fascinating topic. Everybody can relate to this. That's why I really was so glad that we were able to talk. Katrina, how can people connect with you? Tell us a little bit about where they can find you. Mention your book, mention any of your programs. I would love people to sort of know how they can learn more about your work.
Well, first of all, go to my website, excellentexecutivecoaching.com. And there you'll have an exercise, how to develop your emotional intelligence. It's also a very good exercise to have before you do feedback to somebody so that you really know them at all levels before you give feedback. And you can customize a reaction according to the other person. There's also my podcast called Excellent Executive Coaching Podcast. And of course, my book, Managing Brilliant Jerks.
Excellent.
That's easy reading, but instructive as well.
Excellent. Well, Katrina, thank you so much for being a guest, and I wish you
a pleasure.
Great holiday.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Dean.
Thank you for listening to The Business of Intuition. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about Dean or Mission Facilitators Leadership, go to mfileadership.com. That's mfileadership.com.